Thank you for listening to this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more teachings or to subscribe to our podcast, as well as information about our congregation, visit our website at forerunnerfellowship.org.
We're in this Love One Another Deeply series, which is a really challenging thought process. At least it has been to me and a number of you that I've had conversations with. This idea that we're to love one another deeply, that the call on the body of Christ is to not have casual relationships, but for us to love one another with great depth. And what we're going to look at this morning is it's actually even worse than that, because we're supposed to be devoted to each other. And just to look at what this word devoted means, it's like, oh my gosh, this is getting even more intrusive. And I just feel like if we're going to live out biblical Christianity, we're not getting out of this thing alive. It's going to cost us everything. And it's going to be the most beautiful thing. It's going to be the most uplifting and strengthening thing, but we are not getting out of this thing with our skin. I mean, it is going to be costly to do biblical Christianity. And so here we have Romans 12, verse 10, just as a starting point here for today. And we'll look at this passage and the kind of surrounding verses and context a little bit later. But just to get us started, be devoted to one another in love. Just think for a second, just kind of give a little survey of the relationships that we have. Just contextualize, just in this church, in your immediate, you know, relationships. Are we devoted to each other in love? This almost sounds like a marriage verse. I mean, this almost sounds like something that you get on that day when you're doing rings and kisses. I mean, it's like, this is kind of a big deal. It's Romans 12, 10 to the church. Folk, say folk, be devoted to one another in love. This is actually what it means to be a Christian. I was in the prayer room, and I was thinking about this message and kind of getting ready for it. And while I was kind of in prep mode, the worship leader, I love it when this happens. The Holy Spirit encounters us all the time over at that prayer room. Like, the worship leader will start singing your very thoughts. It's just great. So I'm there, I'm prepping for this message, and the worship leader starts singing, "Bind us together in love while we wait. Bind us together in love." And I was like, oh, this is so deep. To be bound to one another. I mean, think handcuffs. Like, inescapable. To bind, tied up. This just isn't the way we normally approach relationships. It's not normally the way we think about being Christians together. The way we think about doing church. Bind us together in love. Be devoted to one another in love. I mean, it's the same idea. Devoted. A deep devotion. When you're devoted to something, when you're devoted to a cause, hiccups and hurdles don't stop you. When you're devoted to a cause, you're all in if it costs you your life. Devoted. And yet, so often, the smallest, dumbest stuff trips us up, and we go from the facade of devotion to anger and rage and resentment. Why are you all worked up? Because they stole my Tic Tac. And we are really ticked about that Tic Tac. And it's like, it's really never any bigger than a Tic Tac, really. It's really Tic Tac size issues all the time. But we get enraged and we move from devoted to one another to mad about stolen Tic Tacs, like 7 calories. I mean, it's really like, just go get a real chocolate bar. That's what you really need. But we get upset about dumb stuff. We get really upset, and the Lord's call to us as the people of God is, be devoted to one another, that you would press so past whatever those little trips and hiccups and hurdles are, that you would be devoted and that you'd not be easily swayed from your devotion to one another. This word devotion is kind of messing with me because, I don't know, it's one that we don't use often related to the way we think of one another. My relationship to you, your relationship to me, and our relationship together to whoever else. We use the word love a lot, maybe to the point where it's lost a lot of its meaning. But we haven't used this word devotion much, so that's maybe the reason it's striking me so fresh, is because we don't often, maybe never, do we think of our relationship to each other as requiring devotion. I should have looked it up and gotten you a Webster's Dictionary. You can all just check me out and do that out on your phones right now and just go look up Webster's if you want. I'm sure it says really great things that are very insightful. So be inspired. Pretend that you read it. Yay, we're all excited now. Okay? Devotion. That we would learn to be devoted to one another, that we would start to think of this as the way of New Testament Christianity. Now, that's a pretty high bar. I mean, it's kind of a crazy high bar. But maybe to help us today, I can put the bar even further and possibly out of reach, and then we can settle for something lower, just as a starting point, okay? This call to be devoted to each other is more than to be devoted to your best friends. I think there's a measure of devotion to our best friends, to those that we're closest with, to those that maybe live at our house. There's maybe a devotion at that level. But this isn't about that. That is assumed. This is about devotion to the one that you're mad at right now. This is about devotion to the one that really bothers you. They straight up bug you. You don't like the sound of their voice. It's probably me and you're stuck because I have the microphone most weeks. The one that really bugs you, I mean irritates you, gets under your skin. It's like they don't even have to say anything and you're already annoyed. Devoted to them because they're saved. Because they love Jesus, because they're a brother or a sister in Christ. Nothing to do with their merit, nothing to do with what they've done or not done for you. The fact that they love the same one that you love. To be devoted to the one that bothers you. To be devoted to the one that you feel constantly misunderstood by. Like, man, they just don't get me. They always say that they don't understand me at all. And to be devoted to them. I mean, these are challenging, violent ideas, if you ask me. These are really intense. How about devoted? Because this is just as difficult in my mind. Not devoted to the one that you're mad at. Devoted to the one that's mad at you. I always find these to be the funnest opportunities. Because I feel like someone's always mad at me. I have the opportunity and the gift of irritation. So I've like ticked everybody off. And so there's constantly people mad at me. To learn how to be devoted to the one that absolutely does not want your devotion right now. They want the opposite. Because you know what our normal is? When someone's upset with us, it's ignore them and just override. It's just avoidance. It's like, no. Be devoted to the one that's mad at you. See, this is toe-stepping. This is intense. To be devoted to one another, regardless of whether they like you, don't like you, they're happy with you, not happy, you irritate them, they irritate you. To learn how to be devoted, this is really intense. Well, let's look at Jesus' devotion, kind of see where this goes. So Philippians 2, we can put up that verse 7 through 8. Jesus' devotion to us. Let's start there. He made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant. We're talking about God here. God decided, you know, I've tried everything except being nothing. I'll try that. I think I can go with being nothing. Being nothing's awesome. It's going to be so much fun. So God, who is everything, makes himself nothing. Why? Made in human likeness and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself. He made himself nothing. His devotion to us was so great, he made himself nothing. I just think about that. Like, what does he get out of the deal? Angry people that even once they give their lives to him are still going to be living a little lackadaisical and flip it. It's like, God, I really think you got a bad deal. I don't want to talk you out of it because I'm really glad that like you bought all this and that this works out really good for me. But I'm not real sure what you got out of this. Like, but his devotion to ants, to mere mortals, his devotion to those that wouldn't be able to give him anything back, his devotion caused him to make himself nothing into human likeness so that he could actually redeem us. It doesn't get bigger than devotion like that. That's just crazy. That is of another order. It is of a God order. And as we see, it's not just that he did it. He set an example through it. I think about this verse when I think about the word devotion. Luke 9:41. You might go, how does this have anything to do with devotion? Jesus is a little ticked. And he says, you unbelieving and perverse generation. This doesn't sound like devotion, Brad. Jesus replied, how long shall I stay with you and put up with you? Bring your son here. It's not so much the irritation as it is his willingness to bear with in the midst of his irritation. He can't believe this level of weakness. He's like, my gosh, have you guys not been listening at all? And yet he's like, how long will I have to stay with you? Because I'm gonna. I'm like, why are you like this? Why are you this way? But I'm not going anywhere because I'm devoted to you. And I just think about this bearing with. He bore with our weaknesses to show us love. He stuck with them. He sticks with us. I just think about that in the relationship to the way that we're to interact with one another related to devotion. What if it was okay that we were, in fact, irritated with that person, but we didn't allow it to touch our devotion to them? What if it's okay that we're disappointed in that person's choice, but we didn't allow it to touch our devotion to them? What if it's okay that we're really disappointed with that person's weakness? They've messed up in that area again and again, but we didn't allow it to touch our devotion. I am devoted to you, despite this, that, or the other. Devoted. So then Jesus goes as far as he can go. If becoming a man wasn't enough, the rest of Philippians 2:8 says, being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even a death of humiliation in a public way, looking like he committed crimes. Death on a cross. He did this. This is his devotion, that he would go that far in devotion in order to set an example. Yes, to redeem, but also to set an example of what devoted love looks like. And so then we read Romans 12:10, where it says, be devoted to one another in love, you know, like Jesus did. Be devoted to one another. Let's just read a little bit of the instructions that we have here on what it looks like to be devoted in this way. So Jesus lived this way. Jesus lived devoted in love to us. His very purpose, his way. So now, he says in John 13:34. So, as I have loved you, so you must love one another. This way of his devotion, the way that he set himself up to serve us in love and devotion. He says, since I did that, you should do the same thing with each other. It should be a reach in your heart. Oh, gosh, Lord, this is really intense. Like, how could a person do that? How, like, we get that you, God, could be devoted to us. I mean, it's a trial, it's a trip, but we've kind of gotten there. We're, like, somewhat on board with the idea that he likes us and that he's devoted to us. He's God, he's perfect, he's able to overcome all the emotions. We even can get to the point where we go, I know I'm supposed to be devoted back to God, the God that loved me. Like, I know I'm at least supposed to. It's hard. I find it, you know, challenging. I've got all these issues and things that make it hard for me to be devoted back. But at least I can see the equation. He's devoted to me. I should be devoted to him. But how in the world are we supposed to carry that over to humans? To be devoted to one another. And yet, this is what Jesus says is the way of New Testament Christianity. Devoted. So much more than tolerating. So much more than befriending. Devoted. Committed. Set. And then Paul says, here in 2 Corinthians 7, this group of believers had at least figured out how to be devoted to at least him. That there was at least an example of a church full of people that were devoted to a person, to a man. Forget that it was Paul. I'm just talking about the very concept that not one person could be devoted to another person. A whole church full of people could be devoted to one person. And if they could be devoted to one person, then why not to two people, to five people, to all people? Here it is. 2 Corinthians 7. So even though I wrote you, So even though I wrote to you, it was that before God, you could see for yourselves how devoted to us you are. And by this, we are all encouraged. So this is now Paul and his company that they're traveling around and they're doing the work of church planting and all the missionary work. And there's a group of them. I don't know how many. Let's say it's 3, 4, 5. Okay? And he says, you were devoted to us. What did that look like? The way that they served them, the way that they loved them, the way that they fought for them, all the different details. And Paul is reminiscing, and he's writing this group that it's been some time since he's been there, and he's telling them, he's praising them. He says, you guys figured out how to do this whole be devoted to us thing. We watched you do it. You were effective at being devoted to us. You pulled it off, meaning it's possible for the human capacity. This is something that can be done. And furthermore, it was a whole church to a group of whatever, 3, 4, 5, whatever the number, devoted. And it's the same word. It's not a different call than Jesus saying to love one another, or Paul in Romans 12:10 that we read, be devoted to one another in love. It's the same idea, to be devoted. I'm jealous for this. I want to live and be a part of a church that does this well, that we're devoted to each other. Not go and sit in the same building at chairs that are near one another, but that there's a devotion to one another, a deep, genuine love and concern and commitment. That word commitment, it's the tough one, because even back to the marriage analogy, sickness and in health, tough times, good and bad. The idea of commitment assumes you're going to be a jerk every now and then. And so are they. The word commitment assumes they're going to be hard to be around for a while at times. And so will you. The word commitment assumes the worst. I mean, it's really easy to be committed when everything's like peachy, right? I mean, very few people bail out when everything's great. But to be committed to one another. I just wasn't thinking about this, but it came to mind. There was a season of time in this church where everything was going wrong forever. It was awful. You will constantly hear or sometimes hear us refer to it as a season of pruning. It was like really, really challenging. It was really bad. We were meeting on Sunday nights. A big Sunday night attendance would be 20 people. A big one. There were plenty of weeks where I preached to like 8. It was just painful. Not just numbers. Part of the reason people weren't coming, they were a part of the church. They're just like, whenever I get around the rest of you, it's oppressive. I'll just stay home. Like, I'll watch online or something. We didn't stream. So I don't know how that worked. Just now realizing that. It was a really challenging time. Like, really. There was just so many different personal problems and life circumstances. It was really, really challenging. But the ones that were a part of that church in that season didn't leave. There was such a commitment to each other and to the church, even though the pain was, like, through the roof. My message this morning isn't, don't ever leave Foreigner Fellowship. It's not really my point. But I am looking back on that and going, man, there was a season where there was some serious commitment to each other because it was all we had, literally all we had. We didn't have a worship leader. We had to try to find a worship leader every single week from someplace that didn't go to our church. I mean, it was like It was really challenging. We didn't have our own space. There was just 1,000 things that made it very, very difficult. But there was something of a nature of committed to each other. It's like, well, we really don't have anything else but each other. And in a measure of that was really beautiful. I'm just thinking about that and really the gift that that was. What does it look like to make commitments to one another that aren't about, that's not transactional? It's not what I get from you. I'm committed to you because you're you, because you love the Lord, and because we're in this thing together. Not because you fit the criteria of what I like in a person or a friend, but because you have value to Christ, regardless of how I perceive your gifts, your skills, your experience, your personality. You have value to him, and therefore be committed to one another. I'm stirred by this. So Paul praises the Corinthians and says, look, you guys figured this out. I look at that and I go, you know, the Corinthians were probably the most carnal church. And yet the carnal ones figured out how to be devoted in love. So they had some other issues that definitely needed some spankings. But they were like really committed to being devoted to one another and to the apostles. And I just look at that and go, man, that's a really different perspective on Corinth. That constantly has got such a bad rap for their immorality and their this and their that. All true. And yet in the midst of that, they were devoted believers to one another. That's cool. Philippians 2:5, that same passage we were just reading a minute ago, but just a little bit before it. Philippians 2:5, Paul says this, in your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus. And then he goes into, what was Christ's mindset? Oh, you know, he's God, he became nothing, he died on a cross for you. Have the same devotion, if you will, to one another in your relationships with one another. Oh my gosh, how can this possibly be in the Bible? This bar is so high that we would have the same mindset with each other that Christ did in coming, becoming nothing, and dying on a cross for us. That we would look at each other and go, I'm going to try to have the same mindset in this conversation with you that Christ has. That just doesn't leave any room for the nonsense, bickering about dumb stuff and Tic Tacs. It's like, that's absurd. It's absurd that we would hold things against each other, that we would be begrudging, that we would be upset with one another for more than about 5 minutes. It's total nonsense. We're supposed to be devoted to each other. And Jesus, I just imagine Jesus in that statement, he was mad for as long as it took him to get the words out of his mouth. Oh, unbelieving and perverse generation. How long must I be with you? Okay, now give me your kid. Let's bless him. Let's do it. And it was over. So say your little thing if you got to say your thing and then get your attitude out and get back to loving one another. To be devoted to one another. This is the call of New Testament Christianity, is to be devoted to the one you're irritated with, like Christ is with you. To be devoted to the one that's irritated with you, which can sometimes even be harder. To be devoted to them in your relationships with each other, to have that level of expression of love and devotion. This is mind-blowing stuff to me. I'm like, how can this possibly be in the Bible? I've never seen this before. That we would be challenged to have that kind of devotion. I just really can't even imagine any room for the nonsense. Listen, all day long, I have feelings and emotions. I get text messages all the time that I am not excited about. I have conversations with people all the time that I'm like, well, that's just dumb. You dumb dumb. But I do my absolute best to not show it on my face because I want to try to love this person because I'm working out this muscle of being devoted to one another and not as well as I'd like. But I'm like, I'm reading these verses and they're messing with me. It's like, where in the world is the room for dishonor, disunity, disgust, all the disses, to be devoted? And that would be our expression of New Testament Christianity. I mean, start asking yourself the question, are the words that are about to come out of my mouth going to express devotion to you or demotion to you? I mean, I think if we just start asking ourselves the question, it's really intense. Got another one for you, just another idea. Identifying some ways that devoted to each other can look. I mean, I am sure each one of you, after hearing this, could go and make your own list and preach this message 10 times better. I'm taking a first stab at it here, okay? But I'm just thinking of some ways that devotion to one another can look. The way that we carry one another. Think about what that looks like. The ones that are in close proximity. You can't possibly be devoted to a person you've never met, and you can't possibly be devoted to a person you just met that you won't see again tomorrow or soon. So I'm talking about close proximity relationships. I'm talking about the ones that you do see, the ones that you do know, the ones that you do have a relationship with, the ones that you are meeting and will see more. What does it look like to carry one another? I think that's a great expression of devotion. Carry one another's burdens. Carry one another through difficulty. I just think of our sweet friend Erica right now and how weak in body she is and how much we do our best to carry her through that. And there's a measure of devotion that I'm watching. I want to see it even more. I want to see it even more from me. But Erica's body is weak in frame and requires that we carry her. And to a degree, we are. And again, I want us to do that even better. But it's like that's an expression of devotion. To carry someone, to help them, to do what we can, to help that one that is in need. It doesn't have to be physical. It could be mental, financial, emotional, all the holes. That we would be there to carry them. I think carrying someone is a great expression of that word devotion. The way we actually pray for each other. Actually. Just going to throw this out there. It's not like it's the only barometer for spirituality. When was the last time you wept over someone else's need? You saw someone's need and you wept over it. I mean, I don't want my answer to be 8 years ago or never. The way that we would carry each other and the way that we would pray for one another, for real, not just the token prayer. And I'll tell you what, token prayer is way better than no prayer. So don't discount that. If you prayed it, it mattered. But like, what does it look like to really pray for somebody? Go, no, God, come on. Lord. What does it look like to actually press in and pray for somebody? I think that's a great expression of devotion. Because you can't do that and not touch the devotion thing, I don't think. If you're actually praying, you're something in you. And that can look a lot of different ways, but that was just another one. I was just like, what does it look like to be devoted to you? That I would actually pray for your need. And like, oh God, you know, to even be irritated with my own lack of emotion. Lord, I am not feeling it, and they probably need me to feel it. Would you help me feel it? Would you help me care? I don't really care. I mean, I'm praying because I know I should. That's a start, but I don't actually feel the emotions of care. Would you give me a give a care so that I've got something to bring before you as I pray for this person? To actually pray for one another. How about the way we fight for each other? Not fight each other. No. Brad told us we're supposed to fight. Fight club, ready to go. Touche. The way we fight for each other. The way we fight for each other's good, for each other's rights, for each other's joy, for each other's exaltation, promotion, the way we fight for each other's character. You know, it's devotion to each other to correct one another. Did you know that? that we would fight for one another's character. That we would love each other enough to say, hey, this isn't awesome. This is not the fragrance of Christ. Don't be judgy. Don't have to come down on them. But it's kindness. It's actually devotion that we would correct one another. When things are out of line, things are out of place, that's a truth. That's proof of devotion. I'm just thinking about if one of my kids was out of line, it's my devotion to them, their future friends, or not having any friends, for me to correct them. That's actually my devotion to them. So don't look at being corrected as the opposite of devotion. You are in error. Correction is an absolute aspect of devotion because you care about their good. You care about their excellence. You care about the fragrance of Christ. You care about their inner man. You care about the way that others see them. You care. Correction is actually an expression of devotion. But sometimes we don't want to do that. It was like, well, they might be mad at me. Well, why don't we work on that next? But to correct one another and to receive it, I'll just tell you this. Listen, this is something I am committed to. I am committed to this, and you can test me on it. I am committed to be correctable. I'm committed to it. That if someone brings something to me and says, Brad, bad, equal sign, because you did this, that I am going to listen and not dismiss it. And I'm not going to get defensive about it. And if I get defensive about it, I'm going to come and apologize to you for my defensiveness later because there's no place for defensiveness. If you correct me, it's for my good. And I'm committed to it. What if we would all be committed that there's no such thing as offense when someone corrects us? They're actually fighting for us. They're trying to help us. They want us to grow up all we can be. They want us to have that fruit of the Spirit. And do we know that when we're operating in the fruit of the Spirit, we feel better? We feel better. All the ooey, gooey, warm feelings. When we operate according to the flesh, we feel worse. We're actually participating with all that slime that's a part of the other kingdom. For someone to come and correct us is a kindness. It's proof of their devotion to us. The way that we fight for one another. Last one I'm going to go with today. Worship team, you can come on up, but don't strum yet. It throws me off. Ephesians 4:3. I'm a mess. What can I say? Ephesians 4:3. Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. Oh, no. Make every effort to keep unity. How many times things happen, whether circumstantial or relational friction, that cause an angst against unity? But here's Paul giving one of the secrets to how Christianity is supposed to operate. He says, you are supposed to make every effort, I'm going to say fight for. You're supposed to make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit and the bond of peace. That in our relationships with each other, that we would fight for that. Whenever there's disunity, just tell me this. Are we all smart enough to pick up on disunity? When there's disunity in our midst, whether it's in your marriage or your friendship or your small group or your church, and there's disunity, aren't we all aware of it? Elephant in the room, and yet we all just kind of like, I don't see nothing, don't know nothing about nothing, and we just kind of ignore it. What if instead we addressed it? We said, no, we're going to fight for unity. We're going to do whatever it takes. We're going to make every effort, like saying the thing that nobody wants to hear, like having the conversation nobody wants to have, like addressing the issue of the disunity, calling it straight out. There's like disunity. What do we need to do? Make every effort. What if we would make every effort to keep the unity in our midst? People want to be a part of places that are unified. People don't want to be a part of places that aren't. The enemy's favorite thing to do is to find a place that's unified and sow in discord. It's his favorite thing. He just wants to put a little chaos in a happy garden. That's what he loves to do. He loves to sow disunity. We're not in a battle against each other. We're made out of dust. We're in a battle against the enemy and his plans. And he loves to sow in disunity. And we're supposed to make every effort. See, this is what it means to be committed to one another, to be devoted. See, that devotion gets tested when things are out of place, not when everything's fine and it's smooth sailing. See, when there's disunity, there's discord, there's division. When there's those things, that's when we've got to go, I am going to do, what would it take? God, what thing on planet Earth would fix this? Help me have it. Help me do it. To make every effort to fix disunity, to fight for unity, and have that bond of peace. We all love peace. Nobody loves going to bed at night all stirred up and angry and all. No one likes that. We like peace. Do whatever it takes, as far as it depends on you, to fight for peace, to have unity in our midst. I just look at this and I'm like, man, God, help us get there. This is like, this is the best. Who would want to be a part of that church? I would be a part of that church. This sounds amazing. And it's not supposed to be the one super church. This is supposed to be normal Christian dudes and gals. This is supposed to be just normal Christianity. We've missed it by so far. We have so been out of the way of what New Testament Christianity is supposed to look like and feel like that we're supposed to do whatever it takes to fight for unity, to have that bond of peace, to be bound to one another, to be devoted to one another in peace. What if the next time there was something between two of you, three of you, nine of you, two of us? What if instead of ignoring it, what if instead of being hostile with accusation, how dare they? What if instead we said, what effort could I take? I need to make every effort to keep unity. Man, I think that's where this is going. I think that's actually what we're supposed to be doing. And because it's in the Bible, he'll give us grace to do it if we'll do it. So it's not like this is an impossibility. I mean, if the Word of God says, keep the unity, make every effort, then it can't possibly be that if we make every effort, we're going to fail. We're just following the Bible. Don't forget God exists. Like, he's real. If he doesn't, what are we doing here anyway? But because he's real, he's involved in the equation, so you can ask him for help. God, help me and help them and help them. Help to keep the bond of peace and to have that strength of the spirit of unity resting in us. The Lord will give us grace if we'll fight for it.
This concludes this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more information about our congregation, visit forerunnerfellowship.org. Thank you.